702.
Call Aubrey on 011-883-0702.
Listen, I've got hold of Tumisho Mashaba, the author of the book that we were talking about earlier on, Growing Fatherhood. And we thought let's continue with the conversation because our guest for this hour apparently has, for some reason, had to go to hospital. Not himself, but I think he's had to go to hospital for somebody else. And we'll see if we can't have this conversation at another time as we speak about debt. There have been some very, very important questions that have come through that I thought we would handle the next time Dumi and I have a conversation. But I thought, well, we've got this hour. We might as well continue with the conversation. Many, many calls still standing by. Many people still wanting to participate. Dumi, are you back?
Yes, I am. Thank you for having me once again.
Thank you, my brother. I'm so sorry. There's so many questions coming through. I don't know if you heard the last voice note that we played where a gentleman was saying that he resonates so deeply with what you're saying. The fear he grew to have for his father that... And how can he unlearn this fear because he has become the man that his father was? The very characteristics and traits that he hated, he has now imbibed and is now exhibiting. How do we unlearn this?
Well, firstly, acknowledging that you, as a grown-up, as an adult, you still carry this fear, just that acknowledgement alone, it's a good starting point, you know, knowing that you carry this fear. You know, and there's a lot of, I don't know how to put it, but, you know, as a child, you almost blame yourself for the things that happened to you, right? But why is this happening to me? Is there something wrong with me? For me, one of the things, I used to be a thumb suck, and that's one of the things that my parents kept trying to correct about me growing up. And psychologically, it worked on me, you know, as a child. You have this habit, and that just
because that was like your own sort of natural pacifier, the sucking of your thumb.
Yes.
That's
a good way of putting it, but they want to wean you off it, you know, and it's almost aggressive how they go about doing
it. No, not almost. It was very aggressive to me.
I say that
because I saw it with my brother. My younger brother used to suck his thumb, and he was left-handed. And because he sucked his thumb, he was brutalized. He was brutalized for sucking his thumb. They would put... chilies on his finger. I mean, this is a two-year-old, three-year-old, right? Chilies or something bitter on his thumb, and I just couldn't understand why, and the fact that he was left-handed, it would have all sorts of brutal behavior, even for a child. It was absolutely brutal behavior. So I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
So psychologically, it really, really worked on me. And at some point, I ended up bedwetting. You know, so I carried all these things, and even now, I'm aware of some of the anxieties I carry as an adult, and I can really trace them back to my childhood. You know, I'm aware of them, but I'm constantly trying to work to fight against them, you know. My confidence was really destroyed as a child.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm an adult who's aware of that, who's anxious that I need to be more confident, I walk around with the imposter syndrome almost. So these are the things that I'm aware of, which I know are just the adverse effects that I can trace them back to yeah. my childhood. But I'm aware of them.
Yep.
I'm consciously
yep.
trying to just, you know, work against them. So the question of fear is really just being aware of it, you know. That's for me, that's the first starting point,
yeah.
being conscious of that
yeah.
we do carry this.
I want to take a couple of calls that wanted to be part of this conversation, Dumi, so that you can perhaps respond to them. And again, I resonate with the bedwetting. I'm aware that bedwetting can have many, 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 many reasons, yeah, why it happens. But I had bedwetting up until I was about 13. My grandfather had to take me to a place that is considered my ancestral sort of birthplace. Not, I wasn't born there, but my people apparently come from there. And I was fed a thing called infinies. And it was miraculous. It stopped. So it stopped. The bedwetting stopped. So I'm also aware, having done a bit of reading about it, that it's not always directed or directly attributable to some of the traumas that we went through as a child, particularly from our dads. But now that you mention it, I think that it's possible that there's a conversation to be had about why there was bedwetting, having grown up in that fearful sort of environment. Let me speak to Jablani in Jet Park. Jablani, good evening to you.
Good evening to you, Abri. How are you?
I'm well, thank you, sir. What is on your mind?
So with regards to this matter,
yeah.
Just to deviate a little bit, or I could say my case is slightly different, because I understand that right now it's basically, we're talking about the trauma that's been passed on from our fathers.
Sure, amongst other things, of course, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah.
But, okay, right now, in my case then, and I'm just looking for a bit of advice here, if possible. So in my case, I never had that close of a relationship with my father.
Yeah.
But with on instances where we would interact, right? I generally believe that he was more laid back. He was not violent, but at times when you stepped out of the way, he would instill discipline, right? And it would be sometimes it would be physical, and even in my case. And I now understand that, you know, sometimes I needed that beating, so to speak. I mean, I know it's wrong to say that. So, I don't know, maybe there is a connection between, because I kind of feel like I'm also heading towards that
yeah.
monster father
yeah.
that we are discussing, and we want to, it's the problem we're trying to get rid of,
yeah.
right? So, in my instance, I don't think, maybe there is a connection. Maybe a professional might be able to make a connection
sure.
between my viewpoint of how sometimes, you know, discipline is enforced differently. And in my case, I have a 13-year-old, and you know, when she was 11, so this is a real case scenario.
Yeah.
When she was 11, she started, you know, joining friends. And at the first incident was around the festive season, and there was a bash somewhere, guys, you know.
Mm.
And then she disappeared with friends during the daytime, and we looked and looked for her up until one of her friends told me that, you know, she could be at that bash place, and it must have been around 9 o'clock. Imagine an 11-year-old,
yeah.
and when we got there, we found her playing on the swing. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
And you know, I was angry and frustrated at first, but on the way there, in fact, when I got there and I found her just playing on the swing, and there were other kids also.
Yeah.
And her mom was angry. She wanted to beat her. And I, you know, at that point, I wanted to be a little bit more diplomatic about
yeah.
it, and said,
yeah.
"Don't, let's not beat her up, because I don't think she knows what she
sure.
was doing. Let's
sure.
try a more diplomatic approach."
Yeah.
And her mom got angry with me, and I ended up not advising her not to beat her up,
yeah.
and then I spoke to her about it, and then we spoke, and you know, you know how kids are, right? So after that, about a year after again, another incident happened where, so basically she had this tendency of during festivities, she would disappear. Mm. And it happened about three times after that. Mm. And also, I think she also developed a strategy of lying, because she then knew how to lie. And at first, you know, I was reluctant. And in fact, I bought it. I bought her excuse of saying she just lost track of time. You know how. Mm. And I was very easy about it. And then came a time where I actually felt like this was basically she was taking advantage of me being diplomatic.
Yeah.
And I got flustered and I gave her a beating, I think more than once. Mm. You know, but and I think that beating instilled a sense of fear in her.
Yeah.
And she has never done it again. So between me being trying a diplomatic approach,
mm.
right, and having the same thing happen over and over again.
Mm.
And I believe she just took advantage of that fact.
Mm.
And also now, after I've actually had to put my hands on her once or twice,
mm.
then she started behaving well. And I actually think that it's actually out of fear now that she's acting right.
Mm.
And as a father, I think I would rather, I don't know, I'm caught between...
Yep.
Being a monstrous father and
yeah.
being a diplomatic father who will have to tolerate and try to talk everything out, even though that talking is not working. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I hear you, Jabani. Yeah. And listen, my brother, and I'm hoping that Dumi will also jump in and give his thoughts. A couple of things that I worry about, and I worry about them because I'm in the same boat as you. That's why this particular topic is so moving for me, that we want to be the best fathers we can be. We don't want to repeat the mistakes perhaps our fathers made. But I wonder whether we should have a conversation about what I call generational conspiracy. Not just conspiracy, but a thing where we now agree with our father's behavior because we see ourselves becoming like a father, our fathers, instead of interrogating ourselves to say that, are we agreeing with our fathers because it is the way of least resistance now, or is it because it's the right thing? I don't know if that makes sense to you. So I'm more tolerant as a father of the beatings that my child is getting because I'm doing it and I have no other ways of disciplining my child. I'm frustrated and I'm beating my child out of frustration. And so I then make it sound like it is the natural order of things in my own mind because I've been beaten into submission by the fact that I'm unable to come up with more creative ways of disciplining my children. Do you see what I'm trying to say, Jablan?
Yes, yes, of course.
So that's the first thing. The second thing is, there's always something wrong with somebody complying because they're afraid, not because they've bought into something. So doing the right thing is not necessarily doing the right thing. It's just complying. But because I live in a terrorist environment. So we need to ask ourselves as fathers the question that says, sure, my child is complying, is doing the so-called right thing. But why? And what has that done to my relationship with that child? Did you see what I'm trying to say?
Yes, definitely. But just to intervene a bit.
Yep.
So now, but first we need to acknowledge the fact that diplomacy is not always effective.
Yep.
Can we agree on that? That
we can agree.
Myself as a child.
We can agree to the extent that diplomacy doesn't always give us compliance.
Yes.
But let me say this: that compliance is not always. Is not always a sign of good behavior. It's just that, compliance.
Yes, yes, of course.
So let's go back to me. So and then let's see what he's got to say. Jablani, thanks very much, my brother. No judgment here because I'm in the same boat as you, right?
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you so much, Jablani in Jet Park. Dumi?
Yes, Jablani, thanks for that call. So I have a younger brother, Tumelo. Yeah? So the funny thing with my father in his rearing of us, by the time Tumelo was born, and I guess through a series of devastating events that happened, it brought him to a place where he had to really rethink his parenting, you know, his rearing style. So he never, ever, ever, ever raised a hand on my younger brother. Never, ever. He raised him with nothing but constant positive affirmation all the time.
Yeah.
This is, it almost sounds like I'm talking about two different people. Through growth, you know, through growth. So in his own journey, he discovered that, you know what, there's probably certain things I cannot do. I cannot have a heavy hand. Let me try talking more. And it worked. It worked. The two of them really had a good relationship. They could really talk whenever there was an issue.
Yeah.
You know? So I battle with this idea that, you know, spare the rod, spoil the child. I don't believe in it. I don't. And also it informs how we react to situations. You know, we as South Africans in general, altercation can never just be verbal. You know, we violent in just how we react to things. So I think there's a serious problem.
What about the fact that as we grow older and discover that we haven't learned different ways of interacting with our children at the point of discipline, we somehow become co-conspirators with our fathers. Not necessarily because what we are doing is now right, but because we haven't learned new ways, different ways. And so in our rhetoric, in our narrative, we start to sound like we are saying, and sometimes we say directly, that actually it's good to be brutal because we just haven't learned other ways of parenting and discipline.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. You know, when the Constitutional Court outlawed physical discipline because I'm forgetting the proper wording of that judgment, a lot of parents were up in arms. You know, like you are really taking away my right.
Yeah.
To beat my child. I really, really thought about it. You know, it's we have to find better ways, and I believe there are better ways. We cannot resort to it because, as you say, it only instills compliance.
And here's the scaly and sneaky thing about compliance. Just because a child complies in front of you doesn't mean that they don't find more creative ways of non-compliance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes because we get face value compliance, we sometimes don't appreciate how much underground we are pushing the non-compliance, such that it lives in a very, very dark place. And because it lives in that dark place and it doesn't have the shine of dad's eye and mom's eye, the non-compliance becomes even deeper, more daring, more entitled, more abiding. Let's take a call from Mushere in Pretoria. Mushere, hi.
Yes, sir, Obrin, your guest. Obrin, my question is just to find out if maybe the way things were done in the past couldn't be that this thing, it becomes a vicious circle. Obrin, I'm talking about normally in the past, let's say a man will get married and die before maybe they have kids, or maybe they just have one child. The family will encourage the woman to stay in the family, to not to remarry, but have someone who will assist the woman to get children, whereas normally it will be done by someone who is married, who will just be in spirit, they will say, and that person will assist the woman getting children. Of which the kids will grow up not having a father figure, because that man does have a family. But on one hand, he does have also kids on the other, sure. In another family, of which it becomes a vicious circle. How couldn't that also be one of the causes where you find that men growing up without having a father figure, and when they grow, whatever that happened to them, also it continues in with them. That's why we'll have this vicious circle.
Yeah.
And also nowadays, it does be encouraged that, let's say we have young adult, a man does die. The family normally will not allow the young woman to remarry. They'll want the young woman still to remain in the family, only to find that the woman was, maybe they didn't have, let's say, a kid, then she wants to continue having children.
No, well, there's another phenomenon. I don't know what you would call it, Gaspe Dimara. In the Nguni languages, there's a phenomenon called ukungenwa, where if I die, and my wife is still of childbearing age, and I leave some property to her, my brother becomes her de facto husband. In order for her to bear children for the family. And so that which I would have left for her as possessions become my brother's possessions.
Also, they did practice that.
Exactly. I remember this from the conversation I had yesterday with Moira, who was asking about these things, that it happens so insidiously. It happens all the time. And it's not just something that is relegated to the rural areas. It's happening here, Kodikas. It's happening. Where the property that would have been owned by the woman is now taken over by the brother, because it's now the husband, she's now the wife of the younger brother, or maybe the older brother, depending on who's died. Now, there may have been some practical reasons why these kinds of things happened. But do you see the dispossession that happens then?
I agree. That's why I'm saying, of course, for previously they would say that they want to keep the family and also the woman not to. But what does it does to the wife of the remaining husband?
What does it do to the young children of the deceased husband, whose mother must now tend to the needs of her new husband? What happens to Ish Mushere? Thanks very much for your call. Much appreciated. Tabo in Mapetla Soweto, hi. Tabo, hi.
Tabo, how are you, man?
I'm very well, thank you, Tabo. Go ahead, sir.
Man, I was at the pit drunk. But the topic just made me sober. Like, I became sober now.
It's a sobering conversation, Tabo.
First and foremost, I want to commend you about the men who are calling on the show.
Yep.
To have this conversation with men.
Yep.
Men are calling on the show.
Yep.
Men are talking about the abuse that we have endured as kids. Okay?
Yeah, I'm listening to you, Tabo.
Yeah, man.
Yep.
It's my first time on your show, but yeah. I listened to you and I didn't hear.
Thank
but
you, sir.
Today I had the courage to speak up.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
So, man, I just want you to continue with what you're doing now. So my point is, yes, I never like I was never raised by my real father.
Mm.
I was raised by my stepfather,
mm.
who was brutally abusive
mm.
towards us and my mother.
Mm.
But then I made a conscious point that I will never have my kids grow up like that.
Mm.
It's a conscious decision
mm.
that you make. You can sugarcoat it and say, no, I need counseling or whatever.
Mm.
It's mind over matter.
Mm.
If you say that you want to be like this.
Mm.
Like, I'm sitting like this. Now, look, I'm on bed. My kids are on the other room.
Mm.
I just take them in. I'm with their mother. It's a conscious decision, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can see whatever that you say, but it's upon you to make a right choice.
Thabo, thanks very much for your call, my brother. I appreciate it. Dumi, to what extent is it possible that even as we try to be the best fathers that we can be to our children, having had the background of the brutalization that we've had, to what extent can our resolve not to be like our fathers be an opposite but equal brutalization?
That's a difficult one.
See, let me tell you why I asked.
The other end.
Yeah.
Mm.
Let me tell you why I asked that question. Our resolve, our determined resolve not to be like our fathers, can create a grip around the necks of our children that can suffocate them while we think we are protecting them. A grip that can be so strong that it actually suffocates them without us realizing that the grip is intensified by our determination not to be like our father. My question then becomes, how do we become the us that we ought to be, not the guy who's not our father? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. The most common mistake that we tend to do is to live vicariously through our kids what we did not achieve or amount to. We want to live that out through our children, and we end up putting pressure around them. We end up pushing them, you know, to the point where we end up breaking, you know. So I suppose that's on the other side, the inverse, when you turn it around, you know, you're trying to be positive, you're trying to be everything else that your father was not.
Mm.
But in that, because you're living vicariously, basically, that's really what you're doing. You end up breaking your children.
Mm.
But for me, we need to get to a point where we just accept our children for who they are,
yeah,
and love them for who they are. I accept them that they are also on their own journey,
mm,
you know. So we as parents, we really have to try to be the support, yes, to
yeah,
really be that support, you know, to guide them in
yeah,
their journey, and to guide them in whatever they want to be, you know, to help them in their dreams, you know, not to replicate our ambitions and our dreams through them. I think that's the most common mistake that we tend to make, and it can have negative effects,
mm-hmm,
you know, where kids feel so overwhelmed, and if they don't achieve or come close to the standards that you've set out, they feel somehow they've let you down, you know, and then it eats on them also, you know. Because naturally, kids just want to impress them.
Yeah.
by nature, kids just always, if I can just see daddy smile, daddy, look what I drew, you know. That's just the natural disposition that children have. They just generally want to please their parents. So I think we just need to get to a point where we just accept and we love our children and we guide them.
Yes. Can I read you a poem from one of my favorite poets?
Sure.
His name is Khalil Gibran. He, in his anthology of poems and meditations called The Prophet, he says, "Your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. You may give them your love, but not your thoughts, for they have their own thoughts. You may house their bodies, but not their souls, for their souls dwell in the house of tomorrow. You may give them your love, but not your thoughts, for they have their own thoughts. You may house their bodies, but not their souls, for their souls dwell in the house of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. You may strive to be like them, but seek not to make them like you. For life goes not backwards, nor tarries with yesterday. You are the bows from which your children as living arrows are sent forth. The archer sees the mark upon the path of the infinite, and he bends you with his might, that his arrows may go swift and far. Let your bending in the archer's hand be for gladness, for even as he loves the arrow that flies, so he loves also the bow that is stable." Dumisa, thank you, my brother, once again for such a powerful topic, and I hope that we get to talk again very soon.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Really appreciate it. Peace and love.